The weather is finally getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. Washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost like the middleman that passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I am so excited. I have two gorgeous lightweight cashmere sweaters coming my way, one camel, one heather gray. I cannot wait to wear them in the warmer months when it's chilly in LA. Throwing them over my shoulders, going to look so cute. Can't wait. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/judgingmegan for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/judgingmegan to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/judgingmegan. And now back to the podcast.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Well, hello, everybody. You are listening to Judging Megan with your host, Megan Judge. So I like to start out the episodes with, you know, some sort of story about me being a mom and like whatever it is. I like to kind of bring in humor in the beginning because most of my episodes are pretty serious and talking about trauma and, you know, things that people go through in life. But I found lately that I have been, and I like to be honest with you all, in just this like really yucky place, just this place of like, I don't know what it is, where like I was doing so well and, you know, I was happy for the most part. I felt like I was, you know, like living my life. As I've talked about in the past, I'm on anti-anxiety medication. And, you know, obviously had gone through my horrible bout with like the depression a few years ago. And I found myself at my lowest point. And then all of a sudden, like, I don't know if it's what's going on in the world or just stuff that is like been in front of my face. And I just began to feel myself really start to like fall again, if that makes sense. And I'm going to bring Kim before we share her story, but Kim Tolarin is my guest today. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm good.
I'm thrilled to have you on. I don't know. Do you think that it's like
a weird time in the universe or in the world. It's kind of hard for me to feel up all the time.
I've always said that I can listen to, you know, because I do true crime, mm-hmm. I can listen to that kind of stuff and it doesn't get me down. But, you know, the war and the economy and all that, sometimes I have to shut it off. So yeah, I totally get it. And you can get, sometimes you almost get suspicious of feeling happy. It's like,
I know, right?
So
I wanted to ask you, I'm like, I know we just met, but it's like, and I know, and Kim's a podcaster too, but it's like, sometimes you just have to be, I find myself knowing that I have to be in the correct mindset and have like the energy to do this and talk to people. And sometimes I find myself just really feeling like blue, and it's hard to have the energy to feel like I can talk to somebody. And then I usually do this and it really helps me because I know that I'm putting stuff out into the world that maybe will help like one or two people, whoever it is. But yeah,
it always helps not to be alone.
Yeah. I just wanted to be transparent and say to my audience, and if you are struggling with depression and all the things that I talk about on these podcasts, there is always help. I found myself, and obviously BetterHelp is a sponsor for this podcast, but I found myself recently struggling again. And my therapist that I love is writing a book. So I was like, I need to get back into therapy. I have to talk to somebody. And I did. And so I know that I'm like on the way, and it's just, that's what life's all about. It's all about ebbs and flows and valleys and peaks. And I don't ever want to lie to you as the listener to say, oh, here I am, I'm doing great now. And like, my life is peachy and I don't have my bad days and my bad months or my bad whatever. That's what life's about. It's about a series of tests, I believe. And it's what we go through in life, and that we reach out when we need help. So I'm going to start the podcast with that today. I'm also going to thank you. I really appreciate your reviews. Going to Apple, taking the time to leave me a review is so appreciated. Also, I was just telling Kim, I'm now pushing my episodes to YouTube. So if you want to see me in all my glory with barely any makeup on, please go subscribe and like. I probably have like 10 subscribers at this point. It's really embarrassing. So for my own, so I don't have an ego bruise, just take 2 seconds wherever you are in the world that you listen and just subscribe to YouTube. And that's it. You don't have to ever have to watch it again, but it'll give your friend Megan a little bit of an ego boost. So here we go. Hi, Kim. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Really good. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm thrilled to have you on. So you are also a podcaster and you are a true crime podcaster, and your podcast is called A Million Other Choices, correct?
Yep, that's right.
How long have you been doing this?
I just had my 1 year anniversary on the 1st of August. So really only a year.
You've been doing it a year. Okay. And I know, so being a podcaster, the top category is true crime, correct?
Yeah.
So people love a true crime podcast, but I also looked at your bio and everything. And for just being a year into podcasting, you're doing pretty darn good. So you should be pretty proud of yourself.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. It's been really great. I'm located in Canada, so, I've done very well with the Canadian market, and I'm just trying to break into the US market a little bit more.
Okay. Well, maybe your listeners in Canada can help me in Canada with my numbers. I do have Canadian listeners, and my US listeners, please listen to Kim's podcast. So part of the reason I brought Kim on today is because I always like to share stories of overcoming the worst things in life and how people get to the other side and they continue to carry on. And something that struck me with Kim was she actually was advertising on my podcast, and I saw her bio and I immediately was struck with the fact that she lost her niece to murder, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, somebody took her life.
2018, yeah.
So I always like to, I hate saying like to, I want to share these stories so people understand how people are able to go on and pick themselves up. But I do want to find out your background and bio. So you live in Canada. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, yeah, I've pretty much been born in my city of Calgary, which is about 1.5 million people. And I had just a really normal childhood. My parents did divorce when I was a teenager, but really amicable. No history of any kind of violence in the family, no drug abuse, no alcohol, nothing like that. Just really normal childhood. But that did not prevent me from winding up in an abusive marriage, which I then had to leave. And that was quite traumatizing for me, which I can talk about a little bit about how I got through that part. But my sister, her oldest child was born in 1994, and she got into an abusive relationship herself, having, which was kind of frustrating because she saw what I had gone through. And we had been trying to get her out of this relationship for the 4 years that she was in it, from the time she was about 19 until she was 24. And unfortunately, it ended in the tragedy of her murder, as well as his parents, which, I mean, I can tell you the story.
Well, let's,
but that's
let's,
sort of the background.
Yeah, yeah, let's start with, I would like to hear your own story about, because I have shared numerous stories of women like in bad marriages, whether they're physically or emotionally abused. But it's interesting how it can be a cycle, even if you know that like a relative, like son or daughter sees something and then they get themselves into it. I always wonder how that happens and how that works. Tell me about your own marriage. Like, did it start out happy? Was he love bombing you? Tell me about a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it started off the way many of them do. I mean, he was charming and everything was really, really great. Mm-hmm. And then it was slowly over time, those veiled insults that are supposed to be little jokes. Mm-hmm. It seemed like his mental health started to slide a bit. Mm-hmm. And it took me many, many years to finally reconcile that it was an abusive marriage, because it wasn't physically abusive until the very end. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times we think, well, if he's not beating me,
yeah,
I can't really call it abusive, but it was, because it just tears you down as a person and you feel really next to nothing. And so it took a lot for me. I probably stayed another 4 years past when I really felt that it was time to go.
Yeah.
And when I left is really when things got bad.
Yeah.
And that's when the manipulation and the the custody battle and that started, with a lot of the game playing. And it was just really a big struggle. But in that situation, I was able to tell myself that this is temporary. There's a timestamp on this.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you get halfway through a tunnel, you might as well just keep going to the end, because if you turn around, you're just going to have to start all over again. Mm-hmm. And so that helped me get through that process. And sorry, I felt like that was traumatizing, but then, you know, I got through it. And when my niece was murdered, I realized that there's some traumas that they don't have that timestamp.
Yeah.
You don't actually get, there's nothing to get through. You just, all you can do is move forward from it.
I love that you say that, because it's true. It's like, there's certain things you go through in life and it's like that, like you, there's almost like steps, right? You're like, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick myself up. But something so horrific, there's no answers. And you just, I've had a guest on pretty recently, and they have a podcast called the Good Morning Grief Podcast. And we talked a lot about, and then I went on theirs, and we talk about how grief can happen for the rest of your life. right? You could be perfectly fine.
For sure.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, that I see a flower in a field. And then it just kind of like spirals you out. And then to lose somebody so horrifically,
Well, one of the number one thing I hear from talking to other families that have been through a homicide is they always say people don't understand why we grieve the way we do for as long as we do. And I think it's because a lot of people think that, you know, we all are going to experience, if we haven't already in our life, grief.
Yes.
And you go through your stages of grief. And you hope that you finally get to the acceptance part. But when it, like, let's say we're talking about the death of, you know, your grandmother from a long-term illness. What's different about that? Because every death is a loss. It doesn't matter whether it was expected or not expected or how long the person lived. It's still a loss.
Yeah.
But what's different about homicide is that when your grandmother dies of a long illness, you don't have to sit and talk to detectives about it. You don't have to get shown pictures of their body and go through a whole trial process. And there's not a physical mortal being that's 100% to blame for it that you feel angry with. And it's just a completely different experience. And I don't want to ever mitigate grief in general or anybody's experience of that, whether it's a pet or someone that they love. But there's something particularly traumatizing about having a family member or someone that you love and care about be murdered.
Yeah. So do you mind sharing the story about what exactly happened to her?
Sure. So she had been together with her, her boyfriend, Dustin Duthie is his name. And they'd been together for about 4 years. And we had been long trying to get her to see that he maybe wasn't the right guy for her. Not because we necessarily directly saw any violence between them, but he was just kind of one of those, I don't know if I can say it on air, but one of those douchebag kind of guys.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Okay. Egotistical and just, I don't know.
We just got like a bad vibe off of him. You felt like he was like,
yeah. Even though he came from a decent family, like his family was fine. It was just him. And he was also a drug user and he started using meth and he'd been abusing steroids and that kind of thing. And she would break up with him and then she'd kind of come back into the family fold and everything would be good for a while. And she'd have all these plans of things that she's going to do. And then she would ultimately wind up going back to him and then kind of disappear from our lives for a little bit because she was an adult. And she, at that point, she could do what she wanted. And she knew that we didn't really want him around and that. So it was not unusual to not hear from her for sometimes months at a time when she was with Dustin. But this one particular week in the end, so it was the end of July, and my mom had phoned me to ask if I had heard from her because they had been back in regular contact. She said that they were breaking up this time for good. And, you know, we were all kind of doing the eye roll thing about it.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I hadn't heard from her. And she phoned me back a couple of days later and said that she'd put in a missing persons report for her because I thought she was being ridiculous. I thought, you know, she's going to be so embarrassed when they find her and she just didn't want us to know that she was back with Dustin. And on the 31st of August, which was 2018, Dustin actually called 911 on his own and said that he had killed his parents actually that morning and that he had killed Taylor about 4 or 5 days before that. And the problem was we as a family, we didn't know any of this. We just knew that the police had come and told my mom that, okay, we found Taylor, she's deceased, and we have Dustin in custody. And so for almost a year, we didn't know any other details. We couldn't know because there was an active investigation on. So we didn't know about the 911 call. We didn't know what had happened. So, of course, particularly my sister and I had imagined in our heads this horrific event where she'd been beaten maybe and was laying, dying in her apartment. Like it was just It was awful. So we couldn't find out anything until the actual things were going to trial. And we discovered that he had been saying he was going to go into rehab because he had a meth addiction. And I guess he had no plans on ever doing that. So on the 26th of July, it was sort of early in the morning, him and Taylor had come to her apartment and had gotten into bed to go to sleep. And for reasons that we'll never understand, Dustin, hopefully while Taylor was sleeping, took a hunting knife and slit her throat.
Oh, God.
And then he just calmly left the apartment. Like, he's seen on surveillance footage, just calmly leaving the apartment. He went back to his parents' place where he was staying in their basement. I think he was 25 at the time. Mm-hmm. And he just stayed there for about 5 days. And we don't know whether, we think that his mom, her name's Shawn Boschuk, mm-hmm. that she had started to question him about where was Taylor and why my mom and my sister and everybody were looking for her. And he attacked her, stabbed her 8 times. And while he was trying to clean up the mess from that, his dad, Alan Penny Legion, came down the stairs with the family dog named Odie. And saw what he was doing currently or what he was trying to clean up having done. And they fought and he chased him and stabbed his dad 6 times.
Oh my God.
And the dog. And unfortunately they were all killed. He then tried to slash the throat of Taylor's, she had a pit bull named Polaris, but pit bulls have that really strong neck muscle. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't able to accomplish that. So he locked her in his mom's car in the garage. And then he just calmly got into his dad's car and drove back down to Taylor's apartment, where he bought at a liquor store, he bought a bottle of whiskey. And then he just sat outside her apartment and called 911.
Wow. And
so that's what the events of what actually happened. And of course, learning all that was, I'd say,
horrific.
Yeah, rather traumatizing. And I did attend the court. So I did see, I had to see the crime scene photos and the autopsy photos. Let me ask
you really quickly, obviously he was on meth. So yeah. That's obviously did something to his brain, I'm assuming. Which they say, obviously, but just to like have no feeling, it sounds like, and you caught him on camera and just like walking and like knowing for days, like I can't even imagine what that was like when you found out and her mom found out, especially just being a parent myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Our family has kind of taken the take of when it comes to homicide,
yeah,
things could always be worse. And we think, okay, well, she would have died very quickly. So there wasn't like a prolonged period of her being afraid or in a lot of pain. We found her, because I know that there's a lot of families that never find their person, mm-hmm. and who did it. So it wasn't, We're just that kind of family that just thinks, okay, this is what this is, and this is terrible. But I guess in the scheme of things, things could be worse. So that's how we kind of got through the fact of how, in particular, she died. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just something that just lingers. It's just he's stolen from us. Yeah. The future, right?
Yeah.
Of who she was going to become and what she was going to do in her life and whether she was going to have children of her own and that kind of thing. And I think that that's the part that you get angry about is it feels like such a violation of just your personal sense of safety. And because this doesn't, you know, this before this, it was, I've always been interested in true crime, but it was always something that kind of happened on TV.
Yeah.
And in the movies. And then after this, I've come to the realization, and that's why I started the podcast, that these are real families and they're real people, and these things really do happen.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp online therapy will assess your needs, and you can be matched with your own professional therapist in less than 48 hours. You know, I'm going to tell you, and I openly talk about this on the podcast, that I went through hell and back a few years ago, and I was at my lowest point of my life. And my therapist, I believe, contribute to helping save me. So I'm a huge advocate of therapy. The best thing about BetterHelp is it's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional therapy done securely online, available to people worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist. And they have a special offer for my listeners. Get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/judgingmegan. That's 10% off your first month of online therapy at betterhelp.com/judgingmegan. Let me ask you a question. So what happened to him? Did he get out? He got arrested. Is he still alive? Is he in jail? What's his story?
Yeah. So he actually, just on the eve of the trial, he decided to plead guilty. And here in Canada, second degree murder and first degree murder both come with an automatic life sentence. But with first degree murder, there's a minimum waiting period of 25 years before you can apply for parole, and a minimum of 10 years for second degree murder. And he was charged with two counts of second degree murder. That's for Taylor and his mom, Sean, and then one count of first degree for his dad. And they believe that's just because he was a witness to a crime, and that automatically makes it first degree. Even though there wasn't necessarily any planning involved. So he received, in the end, he got three concurrent life sentences to be served, you know, sort of at the same time, and 35 years of parole ineligibility. So he will be 62 when he can apply for parole, not necessarily get it, but apply for it. However, in May here in Canada, we just had a Supreme Court decision that made the consecutive parole ineligibility periods considered unconstitutional. So he'll probably likely be able to apply after 25 years.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. Did you ever get a reason? Did you ever get a sorry? Did you ever get anything from him?
No, not really. At the sentencing hearing where we read our victim impact statements, he was given an opportunity to address all of us, including his brothers. He had remaining siblings. And he said he was sorry, and he said if he could take it back.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Anyone else feel like they're talking like this time of year and sneezing and coughing and annoying your family while you're watching TV like I'm sure I do?
Well, yeah, I know that I am because my kids tend to tell me. Luckily for those of us who live with these symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease in as little as a half an hour, by the way. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He would, but it just didn't come across as particularly, like, I think he was more sorry that it ended for him the way it did.
Yeah. He sounds like he's a very sick individual.
He really is. And before he went into, like, before he phoned 911, he actually shaved his head. And we noticed when we went to the preliminary hearing that he had one of those teardrop tattoos under his eye. So I don't know if he's just trying to.
Like he's in a gang or something.
He's there for life. He might as well try and join a group. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, what do you say in this kind of circumstance? You say you're sorry. You say all the things that you like. This is horrid and it's horrible. Yeah. I had a guest on who's actually a friend of mine when I first started. So I started this podcast in 2020 in the throes of COVID, like when COVID first started. And this was a girl that I met at a spiritual retreat, and her mother remarried this man, her stepfather, and he showed up at her house on Christmas Eve dressed up as Santa Claus, and he shot and killed her whole family, and the whole house blew up. She rescued her little sister, and she jumped out a window, and it's a whole horrific story. And I know this person personally. She's my friend. I think of her often. Like, I know her personally, but sometimes I pick her brain and I'm like, well, how do you go on? How do you continue to have a life of not, first of all, being completely traumatized and living in fear, right?
Yeah.
But also, like, how do you do it? And that's one of the biggest reasons I do what I do and I do this podcast is the how. And we talked about in the beginning, the how is different than getting up after the loss of, like, you know, I lost my dad to cancer, you know, so it was a sickness, like you said. But I want to know, like, the steps for you. I would love for you to talk a little bit about that and how your family did it. Sure. Were you angry? Like, talk about those things, because I would love to know that.
Yeah. Well, initially when I first found out about it, I think I was just in complete, probably a bit of denial, but I just went into that logical mode of, okay, we need to do these things now. We need to, you know, prepare for a funeral. I really wasn't even thinking about what had happened. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when you have those first get togethers with the family and she's not there. It was quite an awful, awful, dark time. One of the things that we've all done in our family is focused on who Taylor was as a person.
Yeah.
And to know that Taylor was never the type, and I think this goes for anybody that you lose. They're never the type of person that would say to you, I want you to be sad every day. I never want to see you smile again. You know, you need to just live in complete misery for the rest of your life. Taylor was not that type of person. And if anything, she would say, look, it is what it is. you know, the end of my suffering has come, and you guys have to consider that and then find light in those moments and that memory and all that stuff. And then that's really how you honor the person that you've lost, because just constantly feeling in a state of misery and why, you know, that why did this happen, mm-hmm. and why did this happen to our family and why did it happen to her, I think just can get you really stuck, because you're never going to get that answer. Even if I sat down with Dustin and he was able to spell it all out and say, this is exactly what I was thinking, it's not going to answer the why for me, because I don't think the way he does. So for me, it's just always going to be an unimaginable thing that happened. So
was she like as a person?
Well, she was super forgiving, which is part of the problem, and she was always wanting to help. She was just a super, super kind person. And that, this one's really tough when people say, what was she like? Because, you know, she had a smile that lit up a room, you know, all the things that people always say. But how do you really put into words that piece of the puzzle in your family that's now missing and what role she filled? She was, when she was 12, she volunteered on her own to help at a senior's home. She would cry when she saw adorable puppies and kittens. She loved babies. I mean, she was just a super, super caring person, and, you know, funny and quite quirky. And, you know, she just liked it. She was always a good time. She had a very infectious giggle. And she always wore her blonde hair in like a little poof on top of her head, you know, one of those kind of messy buns.
Yeah.
Whenever I see that, I always think of Taylor and the color pink, because everything she had was girly and pink. And, so yeah, we've really lost, you know, a lot. She was really special to the family.
And it sounds like your family is very, very close.
We are. And yes. I think that this actually has brought us closer, I think, because you realize how quickly you can lose someone. And yeah, my mom was particularly close with Taylor. She was the firstborn grandchild. So they had a really close bond. And of course, my sister went through a period of being a complete mess. She has her own history with drug and alcohol abuse, and so staying sober during this was a priority for her, and she's managed to do it, and she's actually managed to be forgiving, and she's forgiven Dustin,
which takes so much. I don't know, I have my own issues with forgiveness. It's like one of the things that I just started back in therapy, and I was like, I'm so angry. I can't forgive. It's like one of the things that I wish I could just do. So to have the strength and the ability to forgive, especially in a situation like that, takes such an enormous amount of courage and strength that people can do that. I don't understand it. I wish there was like a manual on how people do it, you know?
Yeah. And I didn't understand it at first either, because I think I was very angry. I just didn't get the why. And I just, you know, I wanted him to suffer.
Yeah.
And how I wanted him to suffer was to wake up every day thinking about what he had done and the loss that he had created, and going to bed every night thinking that. But what happens with criminals is you probably don't get that. They probably just don't see it the same way. They might suffer for themselves, but they're not suffering for that. But my sister explained to me that she, with her own background of drug and alcohol addiction, how substances can change your thinking. And so
100%.
She was able to sort of put herself into Dustin's place a bit and see that, okay, you know, if not for that, he probably would have just been a regular douchebag instead of like a murdering one. And that was able, she was then able to kind of, and plus she knew that, well, Taylor was, she was giving him chance after chance after chance. So she probably has forgiven him herself. So we kind of need to do the same. I wasn't quite as surprised by my mom because she has a, she's more religious.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that was a little bit more easy for her to forgive, but it was more challenging for me learning that from my sister. And kind of coming to that understanding that I am never going to know why. And that Taylor would think that you got to forgive because, and it's probably a bit of a cliche, you don't do it for that person. You have to do it for yourself, because to just hang on to it. I don't know who it was, but somebody once said that anger and hatred is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I looked at it, is I thought, well, why should I suffer? I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything to deserve this. You slowly start to let go.
Yeah, it's true. And also, you know, when you talk about the whys are, you know, out of anger and all of this stuff is, it comes from your heart, right? So the anger is like, and the whys come from a good, from an innocent, good place in us. That's what I think, especially if you are a person that is spiritual or whatever it is. The why is the hardest part. I mean, I'll live the rest of my life wondering why on many things that have happened in my own life. And it does. It brings me to a place of anger. It brings me to a place of feeling robbed and sad and all the things that it does. But I love what you just said, because it is so true. By forgiving him, you're freeing yourself. Easier said than done, right? You're free. You can say all day, though, like, I forgive you. But I'm not being honest with my own battles if I say I forgive you, but in the back of my mind, I really despise that person. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's...
Yeah, well, and, yeah, and I think I've come to a point where I don't wish any ill on Dustin. Mm-hmm. But if something were to happen to him in prison, am I going to lose sleep over that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to feel like I somehow caused it. I think what it comes down to for me is that, did I deserve this to happen? No, I didn't do anything to deserve it. But did I do anything to not have it be deserved? Like, it's just, it is what it is.
Uh-huh, 100%.
It didn't happen to me because I deserved it, and it didn't happen because I didn't deserve it. It's just, it is what it is. And many families go through it. It's unfortunate.
Let me ask you about that. Yeah, let me ask you about leaning on other families of homicide, because it is an important point. I, you know, you see these stories on TV, right? You watch Dateline, you listen to true crime podcasts, but true. You just are like, that I can't believe that happened. That doesn't seem real. That's off of TV. But then there are so many people that it really does affect in the world, sadly.
Yeah.
And to go back to a point you brought up a few minutes ago about the drugs. Well, yeah, the drugs, especially meth, or I've been doing a lot of podcasts recently, because I brought on somebody who lost her son to a fentanyl, which is a crisis in the United States right now. I don't know how it is in Canada.
Oh, it is here too. Yeah.
Okay. And just a lot of information that I'm starting to learn about, like how marijuana is a gateway drug for young boys and what it does to their brains. And like, I'm sure you know, like, your brain isn't fully developed until you're 20. It was 25, but now the newest research is 27 years of age. Yeah. So they're the drugs, and then meth. I mean, meth, you lose your teeth. I mean, what it must do to your brain, I who knows? So it is a point that I like that you kind of think about it that way, or whoever it was, whether it be your sister that was like, this happened because of this, this, and this. This is how I'm going to get through it. These are my own things that I'm going to do to get myself through this. And then like the why and the forgiveness piece that we talked about. What do you say to somebody, like say somebody's listening and they've gone through some kind of horrific loss, whether it be like a loss of somebody to homicide like you went through, there must be support groups and people that you can reach out to. Can you talk about that?
There are. I know that each, at least major cities, each major city will have a victim, some kind of victim services that is specifically for victims of homicide. Mm-hmm. And I know that my sister did reach out to them. It's through our Calgary Homicide Division here. They have some victim services with particular counseling. I myself didn't reach out to that. I had my, I kind of developed an unusual struggle with the whole thing shortly after it happened. And that was like, I've always been interested in this true crime. It's just something that I've always been interested in. So I listened to podcasts and I did all that. And when this happened to Taylor, I really struggled between the grief I was feeling for the loss of somebody and then this morbid curiosity that we all, a lot of us have for true crime, and somebody who's particularly into true crime, we are quite fascinated by the details. And I think that's why it bothered me so much not knowing, is just not having those pieces to put together. And so I actually did seek out a therapist for that, because I was just really, really wondering, like, am I grieving properly here? Like, is it okay to be sad? And then on the other hand, wonder, you know, oh, I wonder if this happened or that happened. And she said, well, what would Taylor think? And I said, well, she'd probably think it was funny. Like she would think it was funny that I was dealing with that, because she'd be okay with it. And then that helped me a lot to move forward and to then, and that's kind of why I started the podcast, was to hear victims, like hear the stories, but understand going in that it's not just the victim. There are these huge ripple effects that happen with true crime, and what it's like for the family. Not just what it's like for the family, say, at the what we consider the conclusion of a case, which is the sentencing hearing, but you know, there's so much that happens after that. That I guess I kind of have a unique perspective on now, that I see that, okay, well, there's a sentencing and they go to prison, but then, you know, they get moved for this reason, or they, you know, it's just more to it. And
I wonder, not to interrupt you, but do you feel like sometimes people find they're interested in the true crime and all of the, you know, all of that kind of genre because they question their own mortality? I always wonder that, you know, and what?
Yeah, well, I've tried to dig into the reasons for why some of us are so interested in true crime.
Yeah.
And there's a number of theories about it that, you know, we're it's a way of prevention and all that stuff. It really just comes down to, and I just think I'm one of the few that's just brutally honest about it. Mm-hmm. It's just a strange, morbid curiosity for the details. And I get that. Mm-hmm. And that is why on my podcast, of course, I'll tell the story of what happened to somebody, because I know that that's what's brought somebody in. Mm-hmm. But then I'll try and talk about, well, maybe some of the issues, the social issues behind why it happened, or, you know, what's happened since then. I've just lost my train of thought.
No, that's okay. I was curious too, how, you know, like you talk about your sister being spiritual, and I always ask my guests, especially guests that I have come on that have had some sort of loss, if they're spiritual or if they believe in signs. So I was wondering if you believe in signs and if you're spiritual, and spirituality can mean all different kinds of things for every person. But
yeah,
I was wondering if you had a sign for Taylor, or you knew like, oh, Taylor, I'm doing this, I'm on the right path, or whatever it is. I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I don't know that I've specified like any particular thing. Like my mom says she'll sometimes when she's going to sleep, she just kind of sees the color pink, kind of like a haze of pink. And that's how she knows Taylor's there. I haven't had that experience, but I've had experiences where I don't know how to describe it. If it's like a moment of clarity or just, you know, a sensation that something's okay, or that Taylor's here, or she approves, or, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, I definitely have to believe that there's something more to death than you just close your eyes and you never exist anymore. I definitely believe.
Do you believe you're going to see her again, or do you not?
I believe I'm going to experience her energy again.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. Cause I'm a believer and we all have energy, and when we die, that energy has to go somewhere, and it just kind of goes into the universe in different, whatever, a different way. So no, I definitely believe that. And I think that's helpful. And you don't have to assign it as like a god or anything like that. You can just know that, yeah, that energy's out there.
Yeah.
And it's maybe not in the same form you're used to, and maybe you don't get all of it in the same package that it used to come in, but it's still there. I mean, Taylor just had, she has to have left some kind of legacy behind. So
how old was she when she passed? You said she was 25? No.
She was 24. Dustin was 25. Yeah. And we have a tree. There's a memorial park that the funeral home that she was cremated at does, that we have, they plant trees in memorial. So we did that. And my sister started a memorial fund. It's kind of like a scholarship fund. So when people donate to it, that money continues to grow in the account, and then every year we kind of come to a group decision and decide what charity we want to support that particular
year.
So
doing something in her honor, which is amazing.
Yes.
Like sharing her story, you know, like getting out there and doing what you're doing and doing the podcast, you know, like all this stuff that we do. I say this a lot, like, you know, this is kind of funny. I never even like really knew what a podcast was. I knew like what podcasts were, but I always thought they were like really smart people, like on NPR. Yes. And then one day I talk about this a lot. I was with my therapist at the time, Dr. Nay, who I love. And I was an actress and theatrical and did all this stuff as a kid up until my 20s. And I was missing that piece of me. And then I started this podcast because she was like, well, you want to write a book? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And it turned into just being like, I'm going to start a podcast. And in a weird way, I really believe all of the crap, like the crap show that I had to go through to get to where I am today, which I talked about in the beginning, I'm still struggling, but I'm doing it. I'm still here. You're still here. We're doing it. Is in a weird way, it's my angels. I believe like the people that have passed, like they're happy. Taylor's up there. Yeah. You know, she's
thrilled. She listens to every episode.
I'm sure she's listening to every episode. Like that's the thing that people know in the back of their minds. We're just devastated. We're never going to see them again. We're never going to have our holidays. We were robbed. We're always going to wonder the whys, but it's like what you do with your why, which is what you're doing. You have a why now, and your why is to live in her and celebrate her with something that you enjoyed talking about. And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah. And I think that's what I needed to come to, is that there's nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And when I started it, I figured, well, I'm just going to tell stories that interest me to a couple of people. Maybe someone will listen. It did explode a little bit more than I expected. And of course, when I did tell Taylor's story, that kind of really exploded things for me, because I think people were really interested in that personal connection, in, you know, what had happened. I don't know. It was just something about knowing somebody that it it happened to. And I feel like I've met some amazing people that have done amazing things. I'm kind of trying to learn as I go now. I'm learning about, you know, what steps to take to try to get people out of abusive situations, or teaching young girls and boys how to break up with someone safely, to prevent, you know. So I mean, on one hand, you can look at it and say, oh, you're just exploiting these cases, but I don't feel that that's true. I think that I am really trying to help, and telling, I know how telling Taylor's story was therapeutic. To just get it out there and just tell people what happened.
100%. And I think that there's always, you said in the beginning, and I talk about it a lot, if death has not hit your doorstep yet, it's inevitable. It's going to affect all of us in life. And it's how you could lose somebody in all different kinds of ways, but it's how you live your life in their memory. And it could be all different kinds of things, you know, and just to be able to be like, well, I'm doing this and I'm sharing your story and I'm not going to forget you. So to be honest with you, Kim, I don't think that it's morbid. I think that it's something like you were put on this earth to do. We're all here for different reasons and we're here for such a short time, you know? So, yeah. I love too that you're doing something to help young girls. I think getting the word out on Taylor, and there's so many girls that are in abusive relationships and find themselves not knowing how to get themselves out. I personally have very close friends that have been affected by it. And I think the more people that talk about it and the safer the laws are for victims of abuse. I know we're in different countries, but there's a lot of work to be done in the US as far as protecting women and in abusive relationships. I think it's all stuff you're supposed to be doing. So I think it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And it's really been kind of life changing.
Yeah.
Really, just to, I'm always sort of afraid to reach out to family members. But all I've ever gotten back was, you know, thank you so much for telling your story. And, you know, if you need anything, let me know and I'll be happy to help. So,
and it'll probably, the more you reach out to people that have gone through something similar to you, the more it helps you or it could help them. So that's what it's all about. Kim, I wanted to find out so my listeners can follow you on your website is amillionotherchoices.com. They can find your podcast. How? Where are you?
Oh, I'm on Apple, Spotify, all the regular platforms.
Okay.
And it is listed as A Million Other Choices. You'll see the artwork is just a creepy little window in an old abandoned building. So that's how you'll find me. I'm on Instagram.
What is your Instagram?
It's A Million Other Choices.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Perfect. Well, Kim, I'm honored to meet you. I know Taylor's shining down. So proud of you, proud of her aunt. And I'm grateful to have you come on. Thank you to all my listeners. I'm sorry, like today's episode didn't start in the cheeriest of ways. And this is a hard story to talk about. But like I said, it could affect one person or a friend of a friend, and look at what, just talking to each other and hearing these stories might be able to help one person, then that's what it's all about. So in closing, be happy by making other people happy. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.